360 podcast to Jay Bird.
Steve.
You're just what I needed.
Oh man. Who's going to load your toad tonight?
Who's going to load my chode?
That is a good tune.
You know, if you don't like the Cars, fuck you. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, right there at the top, Jay. I'll take care of that in post. Just remind me when we're done.
Okay.
I love the Cars. I really do.
Yeah.
Anyway.
their first album is beyond a masterpiece, really.
It is. But that's why you tuned in for Cars Talk. Me and Jay do an entire podcast on the band The Cars. Every week you can find us. It's the Cars podcast. Anyway. Jay.
Yeah, Steve.
Super mega news.
Mega news.
Megasaurus Rex. 15% off sale at the Muskie Shop.
It's on right now.
Do tell, Jay.
15% off.
Muskie. What was it? One time we did it. Remember the Cabbage Dragons? But anyway.
Cabbage. Yep. Musk www.muskyshot.com.
I've had 15%
about 15% off, Steve. 15%. This is the biggest sale of the year.
Can
right
you
now.
Believe it?
It's going on through Monday, the 14th.
Holy! Can you believe it, Jay?
It's. I thought we were going to do 10, but it went to 15 last minute. This is something else.
So let me ask you this, Jay: Bucktails.
15% off.
Crankbaits.
15% off.
Big rubber.
15% off.
Flight baits.
15.
I can't take much more.
Well, the only exception is rods, reels, and gift cards, but everything on the website is on sale. So
dang.
All weekend long through the Super Bowl through Valentine's Day Monday. So enjoy. I hope everyone gets a chance to take part.
Net some savings.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's awesome. It is the big load your chode of savings extravaganza.
Yep.
It's a save extravaganza.
Yep.
Anyway, Jay, couple housekeeping issues here.
We do? Okay.
We got, remember what I said, first one with the catalog? I don't remember what I said, who's going to win, but let's look here. Let's just go for the first one I can find on my phone. Email.
Yeah, you said the first person that takes a picture of themselves once they get the catalog?
Yeah.
Gets a free guide trip, wasn't it?
maybe
it wasn't that.
You win a free guide trip with Jay. Now, this is not a fishing guide trip. He's going to guide you on a sensual journey.
Throughout Minocqua.
Through Minocqua. A sensual journey of Minocqua, Wisconsin.
First, we're going to spin by Fred's house.
Fred's house, check.
And then we're going to go by Jim's house, which is part of the Muskie Shop.
Nice.
Say hi.
Hello.
Maybe have a sandwich, cup of coffee, you know, and then move on to the zoo.
And the zoo is Jay's house. That's secret code. Anyway, I got Dave in Indiana as the winner. He says, all right, all is right with the world. The new Muskie Shop catalog is in its happy place. There you go. He's got it sitting there next to the throne. He's freaking reading that thing front to back. Dave in Indiana, shoot me an email. Jay will send you something because I'm not paying postage. Jay, congratulations.
That is awesome. Thanks for sending, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Good job, Dave. Congratulations.
Nice. Nicely done.
You won a free sensual guided tour of the city of Minocqua, Wisconsin. And so whatever Jay sends you, you don't have to take the sensual guided tour. I'm just telling you, you don't have to. I would take it. Anyway, other than that, Jay, do you remember what we talked about last week? Because I don't. I was black. I was pretty much blackout at that point.
It was mainly Q&A, and we had a lot of fun little stories.
We also talked about Musket Country.
That's right, the Musket Country game. I've been playing. I've been trying to get on the leaderboard.
It's impossible.
Oh, man. Not going to happen.
Okay.
Oh, man. Yeah, I looked at the leaderboard. It's unattainable.
It's like Art Lawton and Louis Spray are dominating the leaderboard. Dude, I suck at my own game. I really do. My biggest fish, I've not cracked 50 on there yet. I'm trying. I'll tell you, in all honesty, I actually play the game. And honest to God, my screen name is Elmer Jensen is Smexy. And I can't get on the leaderboard because it's redonkulous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these guys are killing it. We've looked at it. Let me look here.
I think that one guy on the top currently with that 60 and a half is actually Pete Mena incognito.
Well, right now, Paul, our good dear friend Paul Halter that does the heavy lifting here. And by the way, I'll say this. Paul also made a game called Bass Tourney Challenge. Challenger.
Okay.
Right? Let me double check here because I'm an idiot and this is like literally. Okay, I'm going to decline that call. I apologize, folks. It's just never ending. So we got Bass Tourney Challenger. Paul made that, and he also has an ice fishing game. He's just awesome. He's a really good dude. Check those out. It's from Fish Tech. But anyway, he sent me an email. I'll read it. There were 16 60-inch fish caught in this week. Right? The biggest fish in the past week in the game were all caught by the same user. His name started as Freebaits. And then it morphed into Free Baits Please. And then he got kind of specific with Free Titan Please. He caught 8 60-inch fish in Muskie Country.
Who is his guide?
Well, surely he was fishing with Steve and Paul, who catches them all winter, spring, summer, and fall if he's fishing a Titan. Come on. Forget about it. Might as well jump. That's my little fun thing. So he caught the 3 biggest. So if your screen name is Free Titan Please, shoot us an email at the app. Now here's the deal. I'm not giving you a free Titan. That's not how this works.
But Jay is.
Papa's gotta eat, baby. Titans are actually, you're gonna be shocked here in a minute. We have recovered them from the Smalley Pirates. Anyway, we're going to hook you up, right? But if your screen name is Free Titan, please, what I need you to do is email me, right? Then I'm going to give you what you're going to change your screen name to and catch one fish. And we can verify who it is. So if you can't sneak it past me, I have your IP address. Because I internet good. But anyway, if you're a Free Titan Please as a screen name, shoot it over. There was a dude playing this week that tried Steve Paul. So I've blocked like everybody's name so you guys don't think I'm on there playing it all day long. But my screen name, if you're wondering, Elmer Jensen is Smexy. That is me.
Yep.
Big congratulations to Greg B. Greg B was kicking some butt and taking some names. What else? I'm looking here like Sammy K. You were killing it. Who else we got here? Who else we got? We got a lot of other stuff going on. Oh, there were just so many of you guys that were just killing it. Greg, I mean, a bunch of dudes. So Free Titan, please shoot me an email. I'll tell you what you change your username to, and we will get you a free lure sent out. Jay, we suck at Muskie Country, don't we?
I just haven't put in the hours that I need to. I need to devote my brain power more concisely to that game. You know, it's just like I think I've caught 140.
I suck at it, dude.
Yeah, I just
now the one well, thing is this little secret. Yeah. There is a Titan boost. Yeah, baby. So,
tell me more secrets about the game.
Secrets about the game. So, you know, I own the app, so there's a Titan boost. That's a secret. Paul and me were like, he was like, did I make the Titan too powerful? I was like, oh, hell no.
Too powerful?
He's like, he told me flat out, he's like, I need to back it down. I was like, oh, no, baby. Now, the trick is this. There's a couple tricks in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of bait style, there is a pause boost. So when you pause a bait, there's percentages of what a muskie will do just in real life. So when you pause a bait, there is a higher percentage that they will hit. Okay. And if you hear like me say, it's time to try this, or it's time to try a headhunter or this, that means there's a boost currently going on. Okay. There's also a boost in the figure eight. So we added the figure eight in the game, which is just like you'll notice when you're reeling in, the rod tip will automatically lower. When it lowers, just start doing an eight on the screen with your finger or your thumb. There's a boost there. In landing big fish, just take your time. But just like in real life, Jay, there's a Titan boost.
Okay.
Like, remember we were out fishing and your hit box went up when you were throwing a Titan? Like, you just had infinite life. Anyway, it's cool. So, I don't know. We're talking too much about the game. Time to play the game! I'm also going to ask for another favor. There's a lot of D-bags in the world, Jay. Would you agree?
Really? No, yeah, there's some out there.
So, if you're a friend of the podcast, head over to your favorite podcast format and leave us a nice review. Because haters gonna hate. So, if you're on Apple Podcasts, go over there and leave us a nice review. It's free. If you don't like it, you don't have to listen. I'm sick of it. I don't really care. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't sweat my sack. But if you're listening on Apple, iTunes, you're listening on Spotify, whatever platform, go over there and write us a nice review if you appreciate what we're doing here for frickin' free every week for 3 years.
There you go. What?
What?
Huh?
You know, whatever.
Mm.
But do me a favor if you like what we're giving us. So again, big sale at the Muskie Shop. We got good stuff going on. We got a ton of you guys that have shot over emails about the Muskie School. I've been talking to Pete and Herbeck. We got a lot of good stuff going on that. So the Muskie Shop bass from the Muskie School, you're gonna be hearing so much about that you won't be able to stand it. But me and Jay promised to talk about big rubber and get into it.
Yeah.
So let's get after it, folks.
Let's do this thing, Stevie.
Do it.
Do it now.
Do it now. Kill me. Like in Predator. Schwarzenegger's like, kill me.
There's one, maybe two guys out there tops.
Dude, we're so old, Jay. We are like, do you ever wake up and you're like, I'm old? Because I feel that way every day.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It is just, existence is pain. Existence is futile. Also, Jay, say it. Resistance.
Resistance is futile.
Thank you very much. Big rubber. Now, I'm not going to really spend a lot of time on swim bait rubber, right? So, in my opinion, a swimming dog and a Poseidon are straight retrieve baits that you can add stops and pauses into. But anything that's a paddle tail, while you can rip it and you can do these things, I don't want to crawl down that rabbit hole because it's like a exit ramp off the main highway, right?
Okay. I hear you.
You know what I'm saying? You can sit here and go, ugh. Because, I mean, the thing with like a swimming dog or a Poseidon, the majority of that retrieve, the triggering action, is going to come from a straight retrieve methodology. Okay? It's not wrong. It's not, I mean, it is made of rubber, but it's not what we're getting at. What we're going to focus on are jerk bait, pull bait rubbers. Bulldogs, Medusas, tubes, right? And toads.
There you go.
Yep. That's it. Basically four baits.
The big four.
Don't forget the lowly Susie Sucker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So there's some of that. So let's focus on that as far as that end of the deal. So knocking out the stuff. If you're new to big rubber, let's say you're a bucktail or a topwater, you've listened to us and you're a crankbaiter, right? And you're wanting to expand your game into big rubber. Let's knock out the setup stuff. Number one, dependent on your body size. You've heard so much rod talk, I could suck the bluing off of Smith & Wesson before I say it again, but here it goes. Something between 8.6 and 9.6, whatever fits your physicality the best, right?
Yep.
When we get into the rubber baits, and I'm not talking like a micro Medusa versus a mega Medusa or a, you know, whatever. Heavy, extra heavy action is going to be the ticket. And I feel that a quicker pickup, 6.3:1 reel is going to be the ticket there too. Okay. That's your baseline. Can you do it with a 7.6 and an Abu Garcia C3? That's what I did when we first got this shit. So yes, you can. There you go. End of story. You know, moving on.
Well, so, as far as gear ratios, I 6.3:1, I think, is just absolute bare bones. I'm going to say that most 6.3:1 gear ratio reels are somewhat closer to 30 inches. Mm-hmm. I think I'd go with something closer to 40 inches for an all-purpose rubber rod, actually.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, if it, and maybe you're thinking, like, if it's, like, your rubber setup.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I'm Mr. Generality, like, okay, I'm a hillbilly. I'm a cranker. And
well, you're a one-rod guy, too.
I'm so boring, yeah.
You
like, you get in the front of Booker's boat, and it looks like the St. Croix catalog. I'm like... Hi, I'm poor. I have one, you know.
You hop in the boat with Joe, and Joe's like, where's your gear?
I know, dude. It's like so weird. You know, I've been so fortunate working with a muskie shop because I don't know what it's like to have extra rods. You know, it's just like I have a backup if it breaks. But it served us well because I think that's closer to reality. For a lot of anglers, you know, one or two rods. So let me ask you this. So we're not crawling up rods and reels too much. What's a quicker? I feel like I'm doing a freaking paper towel commercial. What's a quicker picker upper?
You talking about reels?
Yeah. As far as reels, what are those gear ratios or a model that you like as far as if let's say, like, you're not going to take the Steve Paul method and do this on your typical heavy, extra heavy setup. What's a reel where you go, this is like the quintessential really rip and rubber setup?
Upper 30 inch line per turn. Gotcha. I don't care about the gear ratio. It's all about line per turn, really, honestly. Because, you know, reel sizes differ a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not talking about oversized reels. See, that's the thing. A lot of guys like to use oversized reels for the big rubber. You get a more torquey feel. You know, uh-huh. it's a bigger platform. The problem with the bigger reel is it's got a larger spool. There's more line on there. It's higher. So, you know, a gear ratio in a 6.3:1 might get you in that 38 inches line per turn with a big old reel. So that's something to look at. I mean, that's actually is, you know, it's important to look at the actual specs when you're getting into the oversized reels, like some of the big Akumas or big you know, like a Tranx 500, for example.
Speaking of,
it's a huge reel.
I've got them on the, I'm on the website right now. They're actually available.
Tranx 500s?
Yeah, we got
some in. We got some Tranx 400 high speeds too.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if there's any left, but we didn't get a lot.
As of the time of recording, it looks like there's a couple left. If you've been waiting on a Tranx, it's Thursday night. You might listen Monday and they're not there. Tranks has been, and this is not a sales push. Like, if you're a Tranks guy, a Shimano guy, their supply chain has been really tough.
The worst.
And it's not any they're doing. It just what it is. I mean, I haven't seen a 500 for sale in forever. So anyway, not to push a reel, but what you're seeing, Jay, is the importance of gear ratio is one thing, but like you said, that center spool diameter
differs a lot.
Differs a lot.
Yeah, watch my reel video.
Well, yeah, true.
From a week ago or so, I did a reel video. It's quite boring, but
it's,
you know, it's all about how to apply specs, you know, to your particular needs for whatever you're looking for, you know, whether it be an all-purpose or a specific rod for fishing big rubber, you know. Right. Again, you know, like I was talking just the other week on the podcast, maybe last week, I got a Pro-Rex TWS, the one with the purple spool.
Purple.
Yeah, you know, and I got the, let's see, it's a 7.1 gear ratio. It's 37.6 inches of line per turn. That's like, that thing is great for rubber. It's just great. Picks it up without being overly ridiculously fast.
Let me ask you this, and because you, and the thing is this, I'm not trying to get off a rubber board, just talking the gear to do it appropriately. You know how, Jay, we've talked a lot about, like, the ounces per, like, appropriate ounces for the rod is kind of BS, right? And it's old school.
Oh, you mean the lure rating?
Like, the lure rating, okay. Like, appropriate, okay. You know. I mean, yeah. And you guys have heard me enough. I throw a 9.6 shield rod extra heavy, and I can throw a Bass Crank or a Mega Medusa, right? I don't care. You know, if the rod's designed to fight a 40-inch fish, it doesn't matter what the lure weighs. It's all about how you cast. Do you think gear ratio should go out the window and it should just be like we should base what we're doing on inches per turn?
I don't think it should go out the window. Just like the lure rating, you know, applied to rods. I mean, St. Croix is great at their lure rating. Mm-hmm. I think they've always been the most accurate company with that, and I respect that because it's important. It's like if you're familiar with St. Croix models over the years, it's you know what you're getting in terms of the power of the actual rod. You know, the power is everything, not the action, but the power, you know, the strength and the minimum required to load the rod and the maximum without overloading the rod. That is the lure rating.
Gotcha.
Super important. But like you were hinting at just a second ago, other companies like, not dissing Akuma because they've got some really good economy-based rods. The thing with Akuma is
they do
their lure rating is a little, it's a little exaggerated.
Like, we've said it before, but if you haven't heard it before, like a heavy Akuma is like a medium-heavy St. Croix.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, but like Jay's saying, pay attention to that line per turn in conjunction with that. I didn't mean to get to that point where we're talking so much about that video, but Jay did it. Like we sort of all sat around all the brains here at the Muskie Shop and said, let's just do the modern Muskie reel video. So that's good. If you're struggling to understand the differences, the video is great. It should be on the 101 section on the app. If I haven't put it on there, I'm an idiot, but it's on the Muskie Shop YouTube as well. But so quick line pickup is what we're both getting at though, right? So we want to be able to pick up some slack, if you will, especially with your bigger rubber. So heavy, extra heavy rod. Jay's going for 40 inches of line pickup. I'm saying 6.3. Both are really good baselines as far as what you're looking for gear-wise, okay? The things that I can tell you, because these questions come into the app, things that do not compute, Will Robinson. Spinning rods with big rubber, right? Small gear ratios and small arbored reels, okay? So if I'm throwing a 300 size reel because I'm fishing downsized a lot or things of that nature, going to be difficult. Anglers, that musky guys that are throwing spinning reels, it's going to be a little bit more difficult in that game to throw it, because a lot of these baits, and the only reason I'm bringing this up, I had the conversation on the boat with a client this week, is that every lure that you see in the musky game, a lot of them are designed for the bait caster platform, right? So if you're a spinning guy, you need to sort of address that, right? I mean, you can throw a big rubber on a spinning rod. It can be done, but it's not the preferred methodology. So you're going to have to sort of augment anything we're saying, because there's certain ways of doing things. Okay, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Into the meat and tater.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at, because I thought about it all week, because we said we're going to talk about it. And this is the time of year I'm throwing big rubber anyway, so I'm dialed in on it. Really, in the game, if we take all of the baits in the rubber world, right? We got rip and we got pop, right? And I mean, like, how we present these baits. So a bulldog or a Medusa, we're ripping. A toad and a tube, we're popping up. Boils down to pretty something simple, right? So you really have two retrieval styles and two options of each class. So starting with the ripping baits, the quintessential, the perennial bulldog, and the ever popular Medusa.
Yeah.
Okay. So the difference in these two baits, and I'm not talking the where, when, and why so much so far. The differences in these baits, right? So if you were to hold a Medusa and a bulldog right next to each other, right? You'll notice that a Medusa is wider on the bottom.
Yep.
Right? Where a bulldog has a smaller profile on the bottom. I'm going to grab one off the wall here. I have both within inches. Aha! Right? So I actually, you know, it's funny. Of all things, Jay, I just grabbed like a super old bulldog and a China Medusa off the wall, right? So I'm holding these guys end to end, the head to the head. And if you look at the stand, and I'm talking standard dog and standard Medusa, there's a little bit more material on this Medusa on the side, right? Not terribly much, but it really seems to give a Medusa a little bit more hang time with the triple, like the triple tail configuration.
Yep, the Medusas have three tails. Yep.
Right. Tails, ugh. And if you guys are old schoolers and you know rubber like the back of your hand, you're going to know those like China Medusas are sticky. Remember those, Jay? Like the glue in eyes and the old ones? They're sticky. And that is all over my hands.
Oh, I didn't know what you're getting at. Yeah. Like first gen or whatever.
That's a first gen one. It's funny. And I'm looking at in my hand right now, and I didn't plan this, but we're going to jump a little bit, right? There's different variations between these two baits. So this is stuff that a lot of you guys, if you're new to the game or you're not big into big rubber, you don't know. I have a first gen bulldog in my hand.
Yep.
Not if I could gen two, right? Okay, hold on. Let me grab a gen one.
And that's going to have a top hook, the old jig hook coming out the top of the back.
Okay. So when you look at a modern bulldog versus Gen 1 and Gen 2. Gen 1, Jay, if you remember, when we talked, oh God, months and months, maybe years at this point, we've been friends for so long, it's hard to keep up, right? Do you remember I sent you a picture of a bulldog that has a scale pattern in the pore? And in the hook is embedded in the tail, in the pore, right? So the very first bulldogs had a wire, multi-strand wire harness. The rear hook is in the back of the bait at the tail.
Yeah. Right, right.
Okay.
I remember that. Yep.
So you guys have heard me tell the story about the first time I ever saw a bulldog, and me and my dad did some dicey deal in a parking lot in Minnesota on our way to Canada to get our hands on these things because we had heard rumor of, right?
Huh.
So this bait, the very first bulldogs, they have a scaling to them in the mold, and there is a embedded hook. So I believe it's the 1998 Raleigh and Helens catalog that had that bait in it the first time.
Okay.
And so if you look at the bottom of this bait, it's open pour. What that means is when they poured this bait, the tail and the body were all one piece, right? And they were pouring rubber downward into a mold, and it made a concave space on the bottom. There's a divot, right? So I'm looking at the base of this bulldog, and the belly of this bulldog is sucked in, right? Gen 2. The plastic is a little bit more fragile. It actually will crack a little bit more. The first ones had a smaller tail. Gen 2 has a more robust tail. They removed the hook from the first one's, the hook was embedded in the plastic, the rear hook. The second one is like what you see modern, right? So you have two hooks hanging off the bottom and a top hook naturally on it. Gen 2 has a very pronounced concave belly on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you look at this thing, and on this bait, it's super intentional, right? I almost think when they did this, like when Brad and them did this bait, that it was undercut on the head at an angle, so it forced the concave body on it, right? And I'm going to give some secrets here. I had a long conversation with Steve Herbeck one time about rubber, right? This is a guide to guide. We're talking about it. What makes a great bulldog? Right, so we're going to talk bulldogs. We're going to talk Medusas. What makes a great bulldog is that it rocks. The original bulldogs, the old school bulldogs, were concave on the bottom in some degree that forced that bait to rock on the fall. Right now, they've got it on the modern bulldogs where most of them do it. But if you have a bulldog, a newer bulldog or an older bulldog, that when you don't do anything with it, you just let it fall on its own naturally and it rocks side to side, that thing is money.
Golden.
Golden. Okay. With that being said, so, you know, I'm not going to go through the history of bulldogs, but due to the very nature of mass production, things change. Right. So let me grab a different one here. You can hear them coming off the wall, Jay.
All right. You got a Gen 3 or Gen 4 coming?
I've got very, very modern. This is a Pounder Alpha Dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jumping real quickly, you go, what's an Alpha Dog? Alpha Dog is custom made for the Muskie Shop, and they have a pounder tail on a Magnum body. So you got the giant tail, the big, 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 big thump on a slightly smaller body. So you have a way big tail on the standard bodies, right? And you can actually get the Pounder Alpha Dog, correct, Jay? That's what I got in my hand here.
All three sizes have right. One step up tail. So a big regular tail. Alpha Dog has a mag tail on it. A mag right. Alpha Dog has a pounder tail on it, so forth.
So I'm looking at... Yep. I'm sorry.
Incredible profile.
it's just a lot of rubber. I'm looking at the bottom of this Pounder Alpha Dog, right?
Okay.
If I look at the bottom of that bait, it is far flatter. It's way flat, right? It is flat as a board. Let me grab another standard one. Hold on. Hit me. Grabbing an other old standard, right?
This would probably get a Nipex laying around.
Oh my god, I'm about to get.
You're gonna get hooked, aren't you? Yeah,
I probably will. There's like, well, it's funny. You guys talk about the bait cave. Literally, I record the podcast, and I have 1,000 baits hanging on the wall behind me. So this is like what I'd call a Gen 3, right? And I'm probably gonna sneeze here in a second, folks. I apologize. I've been in these winter allergies that kill me. So I'm looking at what I call a Gen 3. And what's funny, this is in the Cisco color, which is the silver and the white, right? Mm-hmm. You can actually see that this is a two-pore open mold, right? So when they've poured this bait, there's actually silver on the belly because it's not injection molded. The silver is sunk to the bottom, or it's floated up and blended with the white. It is slightly less concave. So as time has gone on and production has got better, they've lost their concave nature, right? So we go from a alpha dog that's back in my hands here. Gen 1, Gen 2, Gen 3. Right, and I'm not. These are not legitimate generations. Like if you email Brad and say, "Do you have any Gen 1s laying around?" I might be off, but I'm going sort of like year to year, right, Jay?
Yeah.
The depth of the concave nature of this bait is lost. Again, back to what I was saying about me and Herbeck. When Herbeck was running Andy Meyer's Lodge, I might get in trouble for saying this, but when he used to get baits, he used to get the Bulldogs, right? He would take all of them, take them out of the package, and throw them and look for ones that rock side to side on a straight retriever on the fall. One of the best muskie anglers in the entire game is looking for a bait that rocks when it is not in motion. Right? So, point taken. How do we achieve that? Let's say that we have, and again, I have this amazing, the paint and finish on this freaking perch monstrosity pounder alpha dog is beautiful, right? The paint's great. The body looks great. The hooks are great. The hardwares are great. It doesn't have a concave belly that's going to force that kind of action. What do you do? How do you get a bulldog to do what it needs to do when it's not under tension, right? We'll talk about that more in a second about under tension ripping versus the pause.
Yeah, baits at rest.
Baits at rest. Grab it. You're going to see one, two, three. All the bulldogs have three divots on the side, right? These are the in cuts. These are the part of the molding process to give it undulation in the movement, right? So in these alpha dogs, or any dog, the modern dog, they have a hard harness, right? There is wire from front to back. There is curly wire on the inside. If you ever get a bad bulldog and you're done with it and you go, huh, how does this tick? Get out your box cutter and cut the thing open. You understand what I'm saying. It is a piece of bucktail wire from front to back, Jay. Correct? Right? Big old piece of, what, 045 wire running the length of this bait.
Yeah.
That is to make this bait rigid in multiple fish. The original Bulldogs, 1, 2, 3, Gens 1, 2, through 4, tore up really easy. Like that Cisco one I'm talking about here, Jay, no eyeballs on it, no painted eyeballs. It's cut up to all hell. The tail's way smaller, and we used to just crush fish on those, and we didn't have these illustrious giant tails on them. But they had some magic. The magic of that was the flexibility of that bait and its undulation on the fall like we're talking about. So if you're bulldogs, do not rock. You what you need to do is drop that thing beside the boat. And I'm not talking the tail wiggling. Look from the tail forward. If that thing is falling flat, what you're going to do is you're going to go 1, 2, 3 digits up, right? We're going to put our thumb in the digit closest to the eye, and we're going to bend that bait a little bit. Just a smidgen, just a couple degrees. Until there's an arc in the bottom of that bulldog. So if you got a bulldog that's flat on the bottom, bend the wire harness to give him a little slope, right? So I'm doing it right now as we speak. I have a hand on the head of the bait. I have a hand near the third closest divot. So I'm counting from the tail forward, divot 1, divot 2, divot 3. My thumb's at the third divot. I'm applying pressure, and I'm bending the bottom of that bait upward. So the belly arches. I want to put an arch in the belly of that bait.
Mm-hmm.
Watch it fall now. You want to see that bait rock. You want to see it undulate. The tail's always going to do something, but the freaking main body of that bait needs to do something, right?
Yeah.
Now, what that will do is augment your dive curve as well. So if the bait's flat, I can bend this one right back. Boom, he's flat. Okay? He's going to come in a very flat, linear motion. I rip him. He glides. And I don't say the word glide. He's pulling under tension, but he glides forward. And then he's going to fall, and he's going to fall kind of flat. Find this happy place where you don't change the dive curve of him too much, but make him rock on the fall. You're sort of mimicking that open pour magic of those original Bulldogs. Right? So try bending that bait in different ways. If you've ever gotten a dog ball while you're casting one of these things, you realize they'll bend right over. It's just a hunk of wire in there. You're not going to screw the bait over. I just took this brand new Alpha Dog, and I've got this thing bent like a banana, Jay. Right?
Sounds like you bent it too much.
Bent it too much. You don't want a banana because it's going to run funky. It's just a couple degrees in the curvature, right?
Mm-hmm.
And finding that magic spot where you can get the rock in the head, right? So you'll notice, I believe there's some other dogs where they change the nose. Let me grab one while we're talking about it, okay?
Yeah, and you're talking about standard dogs. You know, the majority of the Bulldogs out there are tunable.
Right.
But the pro dogs have a flexible harness. They are not really tunable.
They're not tunable, but they undulate a heck of a lot more. If you look at like the double dogs, slightly different head profile, and you got to realize, and we're going to get into what a Medusa will do and compare the two, but like on a double dog, you have more resistance, which makes this body rock anyway. You got two tails falling at two different areas, right? So they create a natural disturbance in a different way. Now, the double dog I have, and Jay's got some double dogs on the way here to the shop. This is probably 10 years old. It's old. I mean, I throw it, but it's just, I mean, it's really more melted rubber than bulldog anymore.
Mm-hmm.
From my torch, but we need to talk about rubber repair, Jay, here in a minute. Remind me once we get deeper in here.
Yeah, that's true.
But with this, you got to realize that two-tail version, that double dog, you've got two points of action on the fall. They're creating resistance. They're not falling at the same rate. I mean, they're falling at the same rate, but they're not falling in synchronistic order. There's no synchronicity between the two, which will cause some undulation, right? But I don't believe it's highly necessary if you tune your bulldog the correct way. So what I'm looking for is when that bulldog is at rest, it is not under tension, that it rocks left to right on a straight up and down fall. So when you're ripping it, I want to feel vibration in that bait. Okay. A lot of times when you take a bulldog out of the package, if you take a bulldog straight out of the box, you hook him onto your leader and you rip him, right? You'll feel resistance, but you don't feel vibration.
Right. Right.
Right. That extra kick. Again, they didn't change anything in the bait negatively. They changed it production wise where it's not open porous injection molded, which got rid of that cavity at the bottom of the bait, which created that unsteadiness and that rocking action. So that would be the real big difference in bulldogs that I see right now. Obviously, Jay, give me a breakdown, Jay. Not micro dogs, but the standard bulldog sizes for the uninitiated, from like your standard dog all the way up from the alpha. Sort of what's the breakdown on size on all those?
Yeah, as far as musky size stuff, starts at the spring dog. That's about a little 3-ounce bait, 2 ounces maybe.
Mm-hmm.
The regular bulldog is next size up. The Magnum Bulldog, probably the best seller, probably the best all-purpose tool. The Magnum Bulldog is right around 8 ounces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about a foot long. And then a size step above that would be the Super Magnum, which is commonly called the Pounder. And that's a huge bait. That's getting closer to, you know, 13, 14 ounces, something like that.
Right. Which is going to be undulation.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's sort of like, there was this, like this trend. Now, do the pro dogs have the top hook on the top of the bait?
No, he did away with that. Okay. That jig hook is what it was, you know, as part of the original harness went away. He had a lot of people asking him to do so, you know, people that were pretty much experts with bulldogs, you know, years ago were like, hey, I'm cutting this thing off anyway. So how about, you know, not having it on their stock? So, yeah, he got rid of it.
I'll tell you, I cut mine off.
Sure.
Yeah. I take my Nip-X, and I've got a bunch of the old dogs. You've heard me mention it before. And
I do, too.
I'll take my Nip-X and push that rubber down and cut it off. I feel like you can find a small modicum of people that are swearing by that top hook. I cannot really remember too many fish I've gotten on the top hook, right? I think a lot of it, too, is the older dogs might have been underhooked, period, just by hair, where it might be a 5-aught and it needed a 7 or something like that. But, you know, if you've got the old dogs, they have a really good action. But, yeah, getting rid of that hook seems like it increases the hooking percentage, period. So you got the flexible dogs and you got the straight wire dogs. And I think the flexible dogs are giving you a little bit of that looser undulating action. I think what we're all going for is because you think about it, Jay, right? When you're ripping that bait through the water, right? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter on the rip. It's moving forward. End of story. That's it. Right?
Yeah. It's catching the fish on the paws.
The paws. What do these things look like when they stop? Man, you just said about hooking myself. I just poked the shit out of myself.
Hello.
Hello. Anyway, what do they look like on the paws? So the flexible dog's going to have a little bit more rocking action to it. Ninja secret I gave you guys is tweaking the bend in that body around the midsection until you get that good rock action. Right? That's the way I get around that. Whether it be a flexible harness or a non-flex, I don't care. As long as the bait does, it's looking good on the fall, that's what I'm looking for, right?
And you hit it too, Steve, you know? It's like, take that bait, as soon as you get it, let's say you got two or three of them, different colors, different sizes, whatever, maybe even different models, pitch it out a couple feet and give it slack line, and what does it do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, do I need to make any adjustments? You know, is this one better than the other one?
Or do you
make
an
assessment?
Or do you have magic out of the package?
It could happen.
It does.
Well, we've seen it with Red October tubes, you know, Timmer.
Some are great, some are bad.
Yeah, there's just minuscule little differences which add up to, you know, a great deal
action.
Of impact on the, you know, on the difference of action.
So that's like probably if I'm looking at rubber, that's it. Now, in the same vein, right, we're introducing a new bait here in a matter of weeks that I'm going to grab it off the wall. I'm sorry, folks.
You're grabbing a bait off the wall. Let me guess.
Rat friggin' Zilla. So, our good friend at Water Wolf has my favorite bulldog style bait, which is not a bulldog. It is called Ratzilla. The plastic on this thing is really dense. It's a firm plastic, but it's supple. It has a flexible harness. You don't have to tune it. It has a paddle tail for a fin on its back. And I've never seen one that didn't rock on the fall right out of the package.
Yeah, those Water Wolf lures.
So Mike,
we're working on getting them. We're working on it.
Mike's got some coming. We're going to have super limited quantities of these. It's going to be a boutique-y deal, right? Mike's up there in Canada.
You know what they call Mike in Canada?
Mike?
Mike the Mad Scientist.
The Mad Scientist.
Yep.
Go Nordiques or Canucks or... Oh... They're Gordo. This is sort of my go-to bulldog bait, if you will. It's funny. It's like if you take a bulldog and a water wolf, the water wolf just feels way floppier, right, in your hand, which is not the softness of plastic. It's really systemic of how he's rigged the bait. And I know that sounds goofy, but like it just even just swinging it around just undulates wildly. It has a way more wild or lifelike look, regardless of what you do to it. So he's got the flexible harness, if you will, or the articulated harness. Okay. And the paddle tail on the back of the bait. So if you imagine a shark fin on a bulldog that's a paddle tail like a Medusa or like a Poseidon. So it's got wild action, big paddle tail kind of thing off the very back of this bulldogish tail. So he sort of nailed the out of the package boutique bulldog kind of thing. But that would be the single tail. I know we dabbled into the weird in between bastard child there that is the double dog, right? But with that being said, you can sort of understand that those single tail baits, we want them to rock. We're really focused on that pause and the dive curve. So as you rip a bulldog, let's say in the typical retrieve for any rubber is going to be this, and it's sort of generic, but this is what I do. The center of my body is 12 on the clock face, right? If I'm right-handed, I'm going to go from 12 to 3, right? So from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock, rip it across, let it fall. The big trick with rubber is allowing a little bit of slack to gather in your line on the fall. The kiss of death is rip and then immediate line pickup to where that bait's constantly under tension, right, Jay?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If that bait is constantly under tension, it can't rock on the fall. It can't undulate. The way fish pick these up when you get the strikes is a little bit of slack, and I mean a foot of slack, a little loop at the end of your rod tip, at the end of each fall, that allows that bait to fall off at a obtuse angles. Okay? You don't want him coming through the water straight. Rip. Pick it up. Rip, rip. And this bait's just traveling in this very straight path. As he's falling, you want him to have enough slack to maybe fall a little bit to the left. Maybe fall a little bit to the right. Maybe he falls backwards a smidgen. Maybe he falls forward a smidgen. Give that bait enough slack to get eaten, right? And on bulldogs and all your rubber baits, give it enough slack that it can do something that's going to trigger a strike, okay? So like with this water wolf, this Ratzilla, when I rip it, I can feel that bait rocking and I can feel it shuddering on the fall, on the way down, right? That's going to be money for you. So again, for a lefty like me, I'm going from 12 on the clock face to 9 o'clock. For a righty, you're going from 12 to 3. The center of your body's 12, right? To your right-hand side's 3. To your left-hand side's 9.
Yep.
12 to 3. Reel it up and then give it a foot where it's not under tension. Pick up that last foot. Do it again. Pick up that last foot. Do it again. Rip. Reel a little bit. Reel the rest. Rip. Right, you can sometimes give it a pop, pop, and repeat. So there's not many things you can do with these baits other than rip, you know, and we're going to talk about pop baits here in a second. But that's the thing, is the magic of a rubber bait is what it does at rest, what it does when it's not under tension, and giving it enough slack line that it can work its magic. So with a bulldog, tune that bulldog so it has the magic. If you need the magic right out of the box every time, the Ratzilla. Jay, Medusa's the perennial favorite.
Yep.
Right? We talked about already, we started on, they have a slightly wider profile on the belly, right?
Yep.
Just by a bit. But it seems that they plane out a little bit better.
Plane better, yeah.
Right? So in our pooling baits, the Medusa planes better, if you will. So it has... The difference mainly is not that the belly is wetter. We have three tails, which slow it down. Frictional force.
Yeah.
Right? So as you rip a Medusa through the water, there's more friction. It's not three tails are better than one, or two tails are better than one, or vice versa. It is the travel on a Medusa at times, if I go from noon to 3, is a shorter distance by a small amount due to frictional force. Its descent is going to be slower due to frictional force. Now, these are minute differences, right? But they matter. So a Medusa has a flat, very flat bottom. I don't really have, and there might be some of the original Medusa that don't have, this like super old Medusas that had any concave nature to them, right? But the undulation comes from the frictional force of the multiple tails. But the travel is flat and the fall is flat. Okay. So if I go ahead.
Yeah, you're saying flat versus a bulldog has more of like a, I don't know, what would you say?
A lope.
A universal has more like a 45 degree kind of pitch to it in terms of nose down.
45 is a bad one. I don't know in my head. Mm-hmm. I can see the angle of travel.
Mm-hmm.
What I like, right. And I'm not trying to harp on the weird bait like with the water wolf, but it's like there's a certain angle. So 45 is really steep, right?
Yeah.
I want it to plane out flatly on a bulldog, and I want it to fall at this weird descent, which is like if 45 is there, I want it to fall at like in the mid 20s, right? A Medusa will fall really flatly, right? So you rip it and it's going to fall nose down, but it's going to glide forward a bit more, right? I like a Medusa. If we're comparing a standard Medusa and a standard bulldog, I like a Medusa when I'm fishing, say, weed tops that are really regular, right? The weeds sort of peak out at 10 feet. And I want to get down there, and I know I'm working the bait at 9. I'm not going to run into a lot of garbage. It's very uniform.
A little bit less vertical changes in terms of the the delivery. Yeah,
the delivery. And it seems to lop off at a less acute angle than even a bulldog. But if you put a Medusa at rest in the water, right, you'll see that it falls pretty flat. Right. So when you stop that bait, you rip a Medusa and you stop it, it's not a completely vertical fall, but it's more vertical. It advances less on the fall than a bulldog does. A bulldog will fall forward at a, if that's 45, okay, I'm trying to do it with my freaking arm here. If that's a 45 degree angle, I think a bulldog is falling in actually in probably in the mid 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Right? High 20s, mid 30s. I'm saying a degree of angle from water surface. A Medusa seems to like come forward and then fall 90, and then it's like sinks 90 and it starts tilting. It's the angle of descent changes. And that's what I was trying to get at, is like a Medusa, like you rip it and it stops and it's like 90 degrees and it starts heading down. The extra flatness and the resistance of the tail, the frictional force of the tail tilt that bait, right? To the point where it falls at a flat rate, and then it starts heading down and the tails catch it, right? And the dive angle becomes far more acute the longer you let it pulse. Okay? That is why I think the Medusa is so popular up north, because you have these weed edges and that thing's falling head first into the weeds. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I see it as. Right. So the tails create more of a, and if you guys are bored and you're going frictional force, think it of a parachute, right? The bigger the parachute, the slower the fall, right? Jay comes from a family that owns planes and they own parachutes. If you have a giant parachute, Jay, you descend a lot slower, correct? If you have a paper towel as a parachute, guess what? You're dead.
Oh.
But if you know, the bigger, the more surface area that is catching water, the slower it falls. And so by design, that's going to change the angle of dive. It's going to change the dive curve. So Medusa is going to glide out, fall flatly, and then not slowly, it just depends on the weighting of the Medusa, but in general, it's going to tilt itself down, and it's going to descend slightly slower than a bulldog.
All three of those tails are just wiggling in the moonlight.
Wiggling.
Beautiful.
It wasn't a Cat Stevens song, Wiggling in the Moonlight?
Yeah. Elmer covered that years ago.
That's one. That's what landed him in the hooscow. anyway, so the big age-old question, Medusa versus Bulldog. Jay, what are your thoughts? Why do you throw a Medusa? Why do you throw a Bulldog? What's the difference there? We sort of covered the physics of it or the thought process of it. When, where, and why?
If it's more cold front conditions, I'd opt for Medusa and maybe even a shallow Medusa, something that can, like,
or
you said,
there
you
is
got
a
that
shallow
plane
Bulldog.
There's shallow versions of both these brands, of
right.
course. Yeah,
yeah,
there is. And shallow meaning it's got a little bit less internal weight in there. You know, I think like in a mag-sized Bulldog or a regular-sized Medusa, those are comparable. They're both about the same size and weight bait. You know, a shallow version would maybe have an ounce or an ounce and a half less weight, so it's got a slower sink rate to it.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are great, and that's a great choice for kind of a cold front situation, you know.
When the tubes
just sinking too deep, or a regular Bulldog, it's pitching down too much, it's getting in your trouble, and you end up having to retrieve it too quickly. Any of these shallow versions, the Medusa is providing all that action, and like you said, there's more friction, it's just a little bit slower, but in terms of like when you really want to pick up the pace, cover water, or you find that just speed is just a little bit more important, you know, a Magnum Bulldog is a great choice in that situation.
Yeah. Just a matter of, and I don't know, I don't really think I can compare action. I think its application is more important. I think a Bulldog and a Medusa serve the same purpose, right?
A guy we should have on the website is Matt Raley, who we fished with. Obviously, you know him, but
yeah.
He's, extremely successful tournament fisherman. And that guy knows the difference in application of these two baits better than anyone I know.
Right. And what we've gone from him and obviously years of experience on the water is just going to be what you're saying is the faster bite, the single tail, the aggressive thing. It's going to go down a little bit more. If you need the hang time, the Medusa. Right. And we get into that, which is going to be, let's say it's a seasonal thing and we get into summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got high vegetation. Well, the Bulldog dropping off at a slightly more acute angle is going to be less advantageous than the Medusa, that we're going to have a little bit more control of the fall over top of the weeds.
True.
Right? So it's not I throw Medusas or I throw Bulldogs. It's what am I going to use to skin the cat that I'm faced with. Right? I don't think one is better than the other. I think they are two similar tools that have different applications. So if you need a little more hang time, and the thing is this, because you talk about shallow dogs and shallow Medusas, a shallow dog and a shallow Medusa have different hang times. Just based upon how they're designed. So if I need extra hang time, I'm going with the Medusa. If I need extra hang time, just one extra, Dog, right? If I need a cuter angle of descent, I'm going with the Dog. If I need a less angle of descent and a flatter fall, the Medusa, right? Now, how do you determine that? It is situationally based, and you making an assessment of when you're getting smacked, right? The other question is this, that comes up all the time, Jay. When do you throw big rubber?
It comes right. That's an extremely good question.
I don't think there's a wrong time. I honestly don't.
Do you think big rubber is one of the most universal all-purpose type presentations that you could possibly have? I mean, it's right up there.
It let's say you took me down to two baits. And I've said it before, like, if I could only have one style of bait, it's going to be a crank. Rubber's right behind it. Right? Because you can straight retrieve it. The one thing about rubber baits, and a lot of guys that you know, they get caught in the trope of rip, 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 right? You can do just about anything with these, but you can jig a Medusa, you can jig a Bulldog. I mean, I would be hard pressed. I mean, to like, if I really sat down, my knee jerk reaction is crankbait, crankbait, crankbait. I mean, if you look at percentage wise, it might be rubber. Like if a gun to my head and you went, you have to pick one bait, I'm probably going to, my initial reaction is crankbait, but man, the versatility of rubber, because you're able to cover with a singular presentation, high in the water column, mid, low, and bottom bouncing, right? So it is extremely versatile. However, in general, it is only fished in one methodology, which is rip, 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 rip. Fast as you can get it for a reaction strike. You know, with a Bulldog, you can get it down there and make bottom contact and pick it back up. Pick it back up. Make contact with the weeds, right? There's a lot of options there. But when it really matters, I mean, in a cold front, in the worst conditions, I'm thinking downsized cranks, and I'm still thinking like Magnum Bulldogs. For some reason, that big profile, that big undulation in the water will do it. So I don't think there's a bad time. Like if we started at the beginning of season, right, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
It's post-spawn, it's early season. I am definitely not going to be throwing double tens, but there is a potential for me to throw a standard Bulldog.
Okay.
Right? You know, all the way into ice up or late season, like right now for me, guys, it's February, 40-degree water temp. That's rubbery all over it. So it's so versatile in its very nature that it seems that, you know, there's plenty of days that a glide bait will not work at all, but big rubber will pull it out. There's many more days that bucktails won't work or topwater won't work that rubber will pull it out. So I don't really think that there's a bad time. Like, if you're faced with, like, really bad conditions, you can't make anything happen, don't be afraid to just grab a Bulldog or grab a Medusa, because what's sort of magical in that sense is if you look at the dive curve of these baits, you throw it and you rip it and you let it fall, the amount of water you're covering in a big C shape.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
2 feet to 12 feet, 2 feet to 12 feet. You're really presenting to fish that they might be bottom tight, they might be subsurface, and they might be suspended. It doesn't matter if they bite the thing.
Yeah, it's like borderline vertical jigging with a long cast.
Yeah. I mean, you really are.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's why it's so highly effective. You know, with that being said, don't go out and throw a Bulldog or Medusa. And literally the last 30 minutes of the podcast are out the door, Jay, if you don't allow for hang time and fall time.
Right.
If it's constantly under tension in a Medusa or a Bulldog or whatever is only running 4 feet down, who cares? Right. You've taken a tool and really minimized its effectiveness. Loping. Get that thing down. Let that thing work its magic on its own. You don't have to have it under tension the entire time. We're going to, I mean, we're already running here because we're going to shift. Apparently, we have to do number two on Big Rubber down the road. I think that's some Bulldog Medusa tricks is just to get her going here, right? I could go on just these two baits forever, but we promised we rips and the pops, right?
Well, here's my thing with Big Rubber, too, that I think is important that a lot of people might not think about. It's like when those things started getting popular years ago and they started getting developed and overdeveloped and really fine-tuned, it's like people were catching big fish on it. And I think the thing with big fish is, you know, big muskies are older, they're smart. And the sound that these things are putting out is the closest thing to natural, you know, because there's no hooks pounding on the bait.
Yep.
There's no rattles in there. There's no segments blasting together. It's just, it's the closest thing sounding to a wounded fish, to a big fish, to an educated big fish, I think that there is.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's why they're so effective with hogs, you know,
because
you can trick them easier.
Right. There's it's just big water displacement.
Yeah, that's it.
So quickly moving on, because I just looked at how long we've been rambling here.
Okay.
When we'll cover more Medusa, more Bulldog here, but moving on to sort of my favorites. We got rippers, we got poppers. There are two poppers. Baits that we work up and down. Mm-hmm. Tubes and toads. Right? And so, you know, the 12 to 3 routine we were talking about, Jay, right? 12 to 3 on Medusas and Bulldogs is a good starting point.
Yeah.
The way we work a tube and the way you work a tote is lifting the rod, right? From a lateral position to, you know, sort of a 45-degree angle up. And the way to work those baits, I mean, you can rip a tube, don't get me wrong, but the way I find to be most effective with a tube or a tote is that up and down motion. The hop, if you will. Right? And so, quickly with toads, because there's less territory to cover as far as configuration, we got shallow, and we got the deeps, right?
Yep. You're talking about Lake X.
Lake X toads. Let me grab a toad.
Mm-hmm. Those things generally are in two sizes, and they're comparable to like a regular or a magnum-sized bulldog or a regular
and Jay,
or
the way
mid-size Medusa.
The way to tell a shallow from a deep is?
A hole in the fin.
Or in the very little gap between the fins, if you will.
The gap. Yeah, the gap in the fin. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
I've got a shallow toad, right? And so if you look at this bait, it is open pour, meaning that it's poured just into a mold from the top down, so the entire bottom of this bait is flat, right? Just like we talked about Bulldogs and Medusas, that is going to make this toad fall flatter, if you will, right? So you're going to pop him up, and he's going to fall flat, and then he's going to torque down. It's going to take a second for it to find a dive curve. So with a toad, the real presentation, like I said, is if you take it from flat in front of your body and you pop the rod up above your head, so from a flat plane in front of your chest to at an acute angle above your head, that thing is going to hop up and then it's going to fall down, right?
Pop, not rip.
Pop, not rip. One of the biggest
one of the biggest mistakes.
Yeah,
yep.
And me and Jay have talked about this. And when I first got a toad, Jay sent me my first toad, and I was underwhelmed because I was trying to rip it. I misapplied the bait because I thought all rubber baits work in the same way, and it's a different concept. So you're going to work that bait in a hopping manner. Now that's not why they named it the toad, but it makes sense. So you're going to hop the toad, which is going to be this big loping presentation, right? So a toad's going to fall kind of flat, and the tails, it's got two tails, and it's going to catch it and slow that fall, right? And it's just very similar between a bulldog and Medusa, right? So a tails, a two-tailed toad is going to fall slower at a different angle than a tube will. It's going to glide out like a Medusa, slower, more forward, and as it falls, it will advance more forward than a tube will of the similar weight, right? Now, One thing I need to bring up, and I wrote an article this week on Tennessee muskie fishing, and I brought up a thing called a top-loaded toad, right? I'm going to do a quick tip on that this week because I had so many people ask. That's because I forgot to upload the picture for it because I'm dumb. But the cool thing with the toad is you can actually take the hooks off the bottom of it with a couple extra split rings, put them on the back of the bait so it's weedless or snagless when it falls on the bottom. And that's a neat presentation. We'll cover that some more. But the toad's pretty flexible in that regard. But the way I like to work the toad is really make contact in a slow presentation, right? Let it do its work. Let it have the slower descent. Let those two tails, again, there's frictional force working against this bait. And that's going to be the slower of the two presentations, right? Again, I'm working from flat in front of my body up to the acute angle, and I'm not reeling up. Again, the magic with rubber, I can tell you this flat out, is if you keep constant tension on this rubber on any of them, you're going to catch less fish. There's a 1/1000 count of when that thing is not under contact to allow it to fall off and do something weird without force exerted on the bait from your line.
Yeah.
Just like the toad, right? The toad is similar in that nature of if you let it have a little bit of slack, that's where the magic's going to be at. Something that I'd be remiss without mentioning about that is if you see the slack go out of your line and you didn't reel it up, it's time to set the hook though. Right? If that slack goes out of your line, rip on him, right? That's the one danger there is like a lot of people, if you're not experienced with fishing in that nature, is you might have a foot or two of slack out on a rubber bait and it goes zip. That's a strike, right? He might pick it up and just be swimming with it. So if you see the slack go out and you didn't take the slack out, blast him. With the toad, it's the same to me, the same discussion between bulldogs and medusas about hang time, right? There is a shallow version of the tube, but a tube's going to fall very vertically, in my opinion. Not a lot of glide to it. Where the toad's going to fall and you pop him up and he's got more hang time at the top of his curve, right? He curves up and he's got a little bit more hang time, a little bit more advancement. So if you need the hang time over top of weeds, cover, structure with the toad, but me and Jay are just tube nuts. Tube nuts. Jay, what sort of like tube nuts? What's sort of your breakdown on the different availability of tubes? Because there's a bunch. So run us through the option of what's available on the market from Red October on the tube front.
Red October tubes. Well, they just came out with a new harness.
Okay.
And it's more of a hybrid harness. It's a cross between a shallow and a mid. Mm-hmm. And it's got a lot of more kick than a shallow will. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a side to side thing going. It's almost like with a good tube, you can get that thing to walk the dog almost. And that's just beauty right there. But in general, there's two main sizes of tubes. There's 7.5 inch and 10 inch. They make a big sexy tube, which is 12. Most people are going with the 7.5s and 10s. We were really dialed in with the 10 inch tubes and prefer the mid depth. Mm-hmm. They come in three depths. We carry a ton of colors and we carry all the depths. They come shallow, mid, or deep. And it's the hooking harnesses are different on all three.
And a vertical jig.
Pardon me?
And a vertical jigging option.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Yep. The deep one has a single trailer in the back, so it's made for bottom contact, you know, less snagability right there with a single as opposed to a treble. But the mid-depth work great as an all-purpose tool, and they've got really good side-to-side action. The shallow, obviously, you can work that thing really slow, and you can work it over, you know, weed tops and such a lot more effectively.
So what I love about tubes in that up and down motion for that style of bait, right? What I think mm-hmm. is magical is, let's say I'm fishing weeds and it's the summer, and I have a relative idea of what I'm looking at, right? And I've done my homework. I understand what I'm fishing, right? The weeds start at the shoreline and they're 2 feet down and they descend to 15. I can really focus on making contact with weed tops the entire way back. Right. I can contact the weeds, and it's such a vertical presentation that I pop it up and it's going right back down. I pop it up, it's going right back down. It's got the hang time there, especially with the mid depth. Like I said, if you've never fished tubes, fish a mid depth. Right? It is not that fast of a fall, but it's not super slow. You're going to go down and up, and it's going to hop up and down. Pop, 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 pop. Right? Working that bait and contacting the weed tops or contacting cover is deadly. Right?
Yeah, it really is.
It doesn't have to advance very far either, right? So the tube moves forward and it goes right back down where a toad's going to have hang time and sort of fall at a different rate. Now, you could achieve the same thing with a deep toad, but it's still not that acute up, down, up, down, up, down, banging around kind of deal. With the tubes, I would say that it's of the rubber baits, the one presentation that I feel like the leader choice really matters, right? I can work a Bulldog or Medusa on a straight wire leader and get good action out of it. I really like the tubes on a multi-strand wire or fluoro, just to try to minimize the hook fouling. Right.
Yeah, I really like using fluorocarbon.
Yeah, I would say this is like the one thing, if you've never fished a tube, until you get a rhythm down, it is going, you can really foul up on your leader a bunch.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Yeah.
It's going to happen. I think that's one thing that a lot of people struggle with. They start throwing it and they go, all I'm doing is hook fouling to the leader. This sucks. And they put them down and move on. So you got to sort of get through that, and you got to realize, like, at a certain point, you'll find the rhythm that is right where you're not doing that, but you got to get through that early growing stage or you're missing the boat.
Yeah, there's little tips you can do with the initial cast when it hits the water, too, and to kind of alleviate that constant problem of when you get it down and, like you said, get that rhythm going, you can probably get 18 or 19 out of 20 casts without any kind of fouling.
Well, what are you saying on the initial cast, like on the initial hit? What's the thing? Don't leave me hanging here.
Well, it's something, I don't know if I can describe it well, but, you know, it's you're stopping the bait, you're holding the line upwards, and it's something about not leaving too much slack right when it hits the water.
Yeah, because
it'll sure find that itself. The thing's pointed. Yeah, it's got to find itself pointed in the right direction, and then let the slack, and then let the bait do. But
what you're saying and what Jay's trying to articulate is when that bait initially falls with that, it's got all the casting force behind it, Jay. And so when it hits the water, it's got inertia and it's diving down and it's going to pull the leader towards itself. Right. And so it's here's all this momentum in the cast and downward trajectory. Boom. It's sucking the line and leader down all at once. You got to thumb it a bit or sort of lift the rod tip a little bit to get the line away from it. Right.
Yeah, I think that's probably it.
Right.
Yeah. I'm trying to picture what I'm doing. I can't, you know, really. It's been so long since I fished.
Well, I was thrown in today, baby.
Unbelievable.
I know.
I don't want to hear about it.
I hear. But what Jay's getting at is that thing is like the tube's going to head straight down. So if you leave slack, like you thumb your spool and you stop the reel, and if you let it take that slack, everything's going down at once instead of there's a separation between the leader and the bait. And it's minuscule, but I know exactly what you're saying. And if you guys are thinking about it, just lift your rod tip right when it hits. Right? So it hits, lift the rod tip, drop it, and then start that up and down presentation. Right? So an up on the hit, let it descend, and then go from there. And one thing, and we worked on this past summer, and you guys have heard us just rail about how effective they are on those negative neutral fish. With a tube, there's not a lot of craziness you can do other than the up and down motion. But the effectiveness of that bait to get a strike on negative neutral fish is through the roof. But the hook set's slightly different. Jay, what things do you learn about, like, the softness of those hook sets? Or the softness of the hits a lot of times?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm trying to think of, God, about every fish I caught was a completely different scenario. I mean, when we went out with Pete Maina that one day.
Yeah.
I mean, the lure was at rest. I kept it in the water as horizontal as possible, and the thing came up and ate it. Mm-hmm. It's obviously following, but it's something to be said about that. Just backing up a little bit. The whole upwards, like 45-degree angle upwards with the rod.
Yeah.
Should often be towards the very end of the cast too.
Yeah.
That you're bringing that thing in, it's at depth, it's working, it's 10 feet down. And then when it gets close to the boat and you're getting ready almost for figure eight type distance is bring that thing up, pop it upwards. A lot of times strikes are occurring right there. But yeah, in terms of when they hit and hook sets, it's like, you feel a sharp hit, almost like a pike hit it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've missed, you're going to miss fish on those. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. But
well, and that's the thing is, like, if you're letting it fall, you got to have a feel for that line. If any slack goes out, and it's finding that rhythm with those tubes of, like, you know, the rate of descent. So if the rate of descent is higher than what's expected, blast them.
Yeah, and sometimes it's subtle. They're coming towards you and they're swimming with it. So you're going to feel subtle changes, and you gotta know. Yeah, it's all about the feel, because sometimes the strikes are not violent at all. Same goes forward. It's a pickup, like with any soft plastics, really.
And with those, I mean, you've got a lot of hook on those baits. You do have a single hook in the middle. You got a head hook and a back hook. One thing I'll tell you that we've done with the tubes is shorten that rear hook hanger up by about 2 inches. When you get them stocked, the rear hook's going to be past the skirt. We bury the hook in the middle of the skirt. So I get a Red October tube. I take that loop. I make a new loop so my treble hook's somewhere in the middle area of the skirt, because I've never missed one that was like nip in the back, but I miss them that hit in the middle of the skirt. Right? So they'll hit it fast, and you got to really be prepared to ram that thing home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so shortening that distance up is pretty effective. Really, really, really paying a lot of attention to what's happening when that bait's falling. I can't stress that enough. I sort of covered it earlier, which was like, I popped it up. It's up. 1, 2, 3, 4. Up. 2, 3, 4. Right? You got a 4 count that if that rhythm is broken up and that thing starts falling quicker than it should, there's a fish on it. Right? The same thing can be said if he hits it on the up. You have to reel down fast and then jerk up again. Right? So if he hits it, he's moving upwards, the bait's coming up and the fish is coming up, you really don't have the advantage of setting on him. So you got to reel down and pop him again real quick. So tubes are super effective for negative or neutral fish, or fish throughout the summer months when there's vegetation. But you got to realize everything has a caveat, and the caveat there is effectively getting hooks into them. So if you struggle with having a feeling for the bait, you really need to be observant of how that bait feels in the water. And anything that does not feel normal needs to be treated as a strike. Would you agree with that, Jay? Or?
Absolutely.
You know, that's a trick there. Guys, we have covered, and I feel like we have covered nothing. But it is like we are pushing. We've been going here.
We're gonna break the surface somehow.
Yeah, we'll do big rubber too, because we've covered like four baits and it's gone on for a hot minute. But quick things that I can tell you with rubber that we need to cover and at least want to talk about. If you've never really focused on big rubber, it needs to be your go-to. A lot of us as musky fishermen go, all right, if conditions are bad, I'm fishing gliders, right? I think the catch, follow, and fish in the net percentage is higher on rubber than it is on glide baits, right? In bad conditions. I think that if you're fishing pressured water, that seeing top waters in rubber, we proved it this past summer in Wisconsin, rubber, you know, if they're seeing top water in bucktails, you need to be on rubber, right? The biggest thing with these baits is having a feel for the baits, understanding the application, like we've talked about, which we'll delve into more on future podcasts, but understanding the running depths of each of these baits and spending the time to see what we've been talking about and go, oh, that's what that looks like, right? One day out of your fishing life, if you take one Saturday, if you're a Saturday fisherman and you lay out these four baits and you spend 2 hours with each of them, you're going to know a ton more than the average musky fisherman.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, if you have the opportunity to get on clear water on a relatively flat, calm day,
mm-hmm.
And practice and observe really what's going on. Be observant. Yeah. It is going to be so helpful for you. Really, really.
I think with any bait, though, that's true, Jay. It's a lot of us just strap it on and start throwing and pray for a fish opposed to going, what does this do?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you understand the difference between a toad and a tube or a bulldog and Medusa, you're going to be better at assessing the situation going, this is when I need to throw this. The other thing I can say is this. Is bucktails don't take a lot of feel, right? And of anything, a feeling, a tactile sensation is maybe the hardest thing you can teach. You can talk about it, but you can't put the rod in somebody's hand and say, feel it the way I do, right? Big rubber, in general, the way it's approached by the average musky fisherman, it is a sledgehammer. It's a sledgehammer. They rip it as fast as they can. It's undulating and big fish eat. Oog, oog. Right? Rubber presentations in bass fishing are finesse. Right? A TRD, a Senko. You know, these are not, they're not sledgehammers. They're finesse. The way me and Jay fish tubes, we fish them in a finesse fashion. Right? When I'm fishing bulldogs, I'm fishing slow and slow. And I'm really making sure I'm imparting action. I'm really focused on, is that bulldog tuned so it's got undulation to it? Okay? These are finesse presentations when you need them to be. Understanding. Go ahead. Sorry. What were you going to say?
When you're in tune, when fatigue kicks in, and it will, if you're out for a half day or more, you're going to be a better fisherman.
Yeah.
It's practice of keeping in tune, and you know, just by using a presentation like, you know, stuff we're talking about.
I mean, and you know, Jay will attest, he brought up before, like this past summer was the first summer, and it took some coaxing, and me and Jay talked about a bunch of like, okay, let's just dial you in on big rubber, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it went from, okay, the first one was a miss, there was a second miss and a loss, and after that, you're hammering. There's growing pains, right? With anything. Like when I first learned how to fish glide baits, when cob baits came out a billion years ago, I sucked at it. Nothing worth doing is easy. So if you're new to rubber, you're going to struggle. You're going to miss a couple fish and you'll get the hang of it. If you think you're a rubber aficionado, I can't even say aficionado. I've had some Pepsis. If you think you're a rubber aficionado because you caught some rip in a bulldog at Mach 10, you're missing the finesse game, right? If you, and I'll say this, like, if you're well-versed with rubber, Look at it, it finesse. Look, treat it like a Cinco or a TRD, or we're fishing a spring lizard, right? Pop, pop, pop.
Yeah.
Let it fall, let it hang, let it fall, let it hang, let it fall, let it hang. Right? The other thing I'll say is this. You're going to get snagged. Wow. Whoop-dee-doo. I will go out and get snagged 100 times if I want to catch a big fish. If you fish this finesse tight to cover and structure, right? If fish are higher in the water column and they're pissed off, break out the bucktails in the top water and forget everything I've said for 3 years on the podcast. Who cares? You don't need help catching those fish. If you need help catching topwater and bucktail fish that are incensed and they're mad and they hit a ham sandwich if you threw it out there, I got nothing for you. But 98% of the time, they're not. So if you're ripping your big rubber fast and you're going, I'm not getting hits, approach it like a finesse presentation. I can't tell how many times I've watched some of these guys that are professional bass anglers, Jay, and gone, how are they fishing their soft plastics? Right? What's the difference between a Carolina rig and a Texas rig? It's how they fall. Right?
Yeah.
That's how they fall. It's like, it's like the difference between winning a $1 million tournament or not is how you rig this little rubber thing. The same applies to musky fishing of the angle of the fall. So we don't rig our own rubber baits because that's unpopular. Like, you know, these unrigged swim baits don't sell, but everyone wants a pre-rigged everything. That's why, you know, let's say this, and for argument's sake, let's say that Bulldog's Medusa came with no hooks and it was just a rubber thing that came in a bag, Jay, and you had to rig it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there would be a million configurations. And it would probably be a one-to-one comparison because you would rig them in different methodologies. But, you know, we have a Bulldog and a Medusa, and I don't think it's apples and oranges, right? Or, you know, apples to apples, I should say. It's apples to oranges because a Bulldog and Medusa are not the same thing. You know, that's like saying a Cinco and a spring lizard are the same thing. Different presentations. It's a Carolina rig. It's a Texas rig. If you approach it that way. When we get into the tubes offer an insane amount of flexibility because you can rig shallow, weedless, all this crap, right? And I'll give you a ninja secret here, that wire in the back, man, you can put cork on that thing. You can slow tubes down because they have that hollow body that you can play with. You can put freaking, right. I have taken sucker bobbers and put them inside of tubes. Cut chunks out of sucker bobbers to slow them down because I need a little more hang time to get the bite. I'm getting nipped, but I'm not getting crushed. What's the difference? I don't want to change to a different bait because this one's working, but I got 3 nips today. What do I have to do? Do I speed it up or I slow it down? So you hear us talk about tubes. The reason I like tubes quite a bit is because of the flexibility that's available there because you can add more weight quickly because we're rigging them ourselves. It's closer, a tube is closer to a bass presentation than a Bulldog is because the flexibility and what you can do, right? So you can add cork. I keep some wine corks in the boat just for tubes, okay? And so you can do a lot there. I don't care what you put in there. Put a ham sandwich in there, Jay. Save it for later.
Can be done.
It can be done. You could fill your tube full of ham. Whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can add weight. You can add flotation. My good buddy Tim Cliver, he has the Tim Rig Water Wolf's working on, which is a gliding tube. There's a lot of different stuff. There's a quick tip on the app from a while ago of how to make those, and the tube walks the dog. So that's why you hear us talk about tubes is the flexibility there because when you're dialed in on a bite, you know what you need to do to capitalize on it. But the biggest takeaway I'd hope that you guys get from this is not that you have to have every color of every soft plastic, but look at them for what they are. Is you have 4 options available in soft plastics, in my opinion, and all four of them do something differently. Bulldogs and Medusa are in the same class, a Toad and a Tuba are in the same class, and you need to know how to apply them and tweak them to get the most out of them. Other than that, I'll shut up, Jay. So, anyway.
Yeah.
15,
good stuff, Steve.
15% off, Jay.
You know what's a great time to buy? To try a new soft plastic?
That sounds pretty pushy, Jay.
No. I'm just saying. No, right now is the best time, period. Flat out. 15% off.
15% off. Shameless plug.
www.net.org.
You can find me and Jay at www.mooski. Anyway, Jay, we're going to have to do, as always with everything, because I ramble so much, we'll delve into some, what we need to do is we'll have to do like just a Bulldog Medusa podcast, because that could have gone on forever, and we'll have to do a Toad and Tube.
There you go.
Which is like,
I can't wait.
Can you wait, Jay?
No, I can't.
He can't wait, folks. Say goodnight, Jay.
Good night.
Later. Thank you.